It's Sunday morning, time for the great outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. And Happy New Year to everybody. I hope you had a wonderful holiday season, that 2025 is a fabulous year for you. I'm visiting with Carrie Luft to start off the new year, which is, you heard Carrie on the air many times with me, and Carrie, you always wax eloquence. Carrie Luft is with the Max McGraw Wildlife Foundation and has, over the years, done a great deal of writing, not only about outdoor issues, but obviously in his journalistic career before that. So, Carrie, I thought I would first of all have you as my first guest in the new year, so Happy New Year to you.
And back to you, Charlie. Thanks very much.
So the new year starts off, Carrie, with an article in the New York Times that I found just grossly pathetic because it was so biased. But why don't we start off talking about that and let us lead to a bigger issue. And Carrie, you spent your entire career before you went into conservation in journalism. So you read something that the New York Times like that published, and I would simply say it was so one-sided and so shallow, and yet the point was very clear. It had an agenda, and it had an agenda to attack hunting, but in particular to attack game farm birds. So you just want to frame it up for a moment as to, I'm not asking you to put your journalism hat back on, but it certainly seemed to be a very one-sided, slanted article, and yet it's a real issue. For those of you who didn't read it, you were spared, but the New York legislature is going to take up a bill that would ban, if I read it correctly, Carrie, would ban the state of New York from raising game farm birds.
Yeah, it would shut down their stocking program that, you know, it's a little bit over $1 million a year, 65,000 birds funded through hunting licenses and Pittman-Robertson funds. And this is not dissimilar to the program we have here in Illinois, where the state raises pheasants and releases them for hunting on state properties. It's actually common across the country, especially east of the Mississippi. And the bill proposed by a Democratic legislator from Manhattan is animal rights-based, but it's opened up a can of worms about just the role of stocking birds in the hunting community, and the heightened controversy that's been going for quite some time, but now this bill has brought it to the fore. And unfortunately, I think if it succeeds, you're going to see it chased in other states as well.
So what is, why would the anti-hunting community, of course, would like to shut down all hunting, and I don't want to spend all of 2025 talking about the threats that face those of us who love to hunt and fish, but it certainly seems like they're ever increasing. And yet in Colorado, they had the initiative to try to ban mountain lion and bobcat hunting, and the hunting community and the wildlife management community fought back, and it was resoundingly defeated. But these sort of one-off issues, they tug at the heartstrings, and they don't really have a lot of substance. How do you think the shooting preserve world, which you and I know well, and millions of Americans go and shoot game farm raised birds, it's their only opportunity. How do we position ourselves so that we're not just viewed to be someone who releases something out of a cage and shoots it just for laughs?
Well, I think there's two points to this, Charlie. I mean, obviously the state-run program is sort of easy pickings for a legislator who is so inclined, because it's something that the government is spending. Now, it's this money comes out of the pockets of people who buy firearms and hunting licenses, but still in all, it's the state participation that puts a wrinkle into this. We need to be prepared to show that released bird shooting, whether it is on state property or private land, is an ethical behavior, that the birds are given a sporting chance, that they're not just treated as targets. You know, the way the Times article unfortunately portrayed this is that a bunch of tame birds that would rather be held than released by humans are tossed out for people to just blast away at. And, you know, if you've ever had a quality released bird experience, you know it's just not so. There are plenty of private game farms out there that do a wonderful job. I can't speak to the public release bird programs as I've not participated in them. But I do know that for many people, particularly in states like New York and Illinois, their first game bird shot is a pen-raised pheasant. You know, there just isn't the habitat or the access that makes chasing wild birds viable in this state any longer. Now, I know there are some very dedicated hunters who do very well on wild birds in Illinois, but they are few and far between. If I'm not mistaken, our annual take of pheasants is about 200,000, down from a couple million several years ago. Is that, you know that better than I do, Charlie, but is that correct?
Yeah, we're down. We were in the 70s, believe it or not. We shot more quail in Illinois than we did pheasants. And we're down about 80% on pheasants and about 90% on quail because there's just no habitat for wild birds or very little habitat. So you raise a really good point. The purpose of shooting preserves is to provide individuals, and often it's our youth, with an opportunity to learn about hunting. And in many cases, it'll be the only hunting someone can do. And I know many individuals, and you and I know some of the same individuals, that for years went to Des Plaines Conservation Area or Chain of Lakes, and that was their pheasant hunting. And they looked forward to it because it gave them an opportunity to work their dogs, but it also gave them an opportunity to bring home pheasants. And instead of just going to the grocery store to buy a chicken and bring it home, they could hunt. And obviously, you know, Carrie, the knock is, well, most of these birds don't survive. Well, that is true. But some of them do, and they wouldn't be even given a chance to survive if it wasn't for released bird shooting programs. But more importantly, as you said, it's how people get introduced to conservation in so many ways. So when you look at something like New York, I just don't know how we fight back.
Yeah, I just think, well, to be sure, there's no guarantee that the New York legislature is going to just support this bill or even give it a floor vote. But, you know, this is something that's not going to go away. I think we have to just be a strong and vocal front, Charlie. I mean, look, I'm a great example of this. My first pheasant was shot on a private hunt club here in Illinois. I didn't grow up in Illinois, and I didn't grow up hunting. And that led me to become a member of Pheasants Forever and multiple other conservation groups, even when my only access was when a friend of mine would invite me to go shoot at his club. I still supported hunting. I still supported conservation organizations that created habitat. I still bought licenses. And I don't think I'm alone. Perhaps not as many people wound up making conservation a career as I have, but you know, this is an entryway into hunting for an increasingly urbanized, less agricultural society. And if we lose it, you know, I mean, there you might make the argument this is not something that a government should do, but a private sector should do. And, you know, honestly, it's pretty expensive. There's not a lot of margin in the private hunting preserve world. And I don't know how an average person can afford to do it very much. You know, it's not cheap, and the state programs are relatively reasonable, and a lot of people enjoy them. I know people who would spend their entire vacation time camping out down at the Iroquois game area near Kankakee and hunting pheasants every day they could, and obviously they love that, and it would be a shame to lose that in Illinois.
I think it would be anywhere, and basically we can't solve the problem today, but we'll come back to it. I'd love to come back to it after we find out what New York does, but it's been proven. This is how so many people are introduced to hunting and into the need for conservation, and if they can't go out and walk in a field and see the reason that we need to have habitat for birds, then we're going to lose that connection. So, Carrie, when we come back, I'm going to switch a little bit to we're not going to talk about pheasants, but we're going to talk about the same concept and what's going on in the Atlantic Flyway which could have pretty serious ramifications across the country. We are visiting with Carrie Loft of the Max McGraw Wildlife Foundation, and this is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN. And first, a message from our longtime sponsors, the Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
Hiking, camping, and hunting, it's all an adventure in the great outdoors, but nature can be tough. You need to be ready for anything and everything. Chevy Silverado is built to handle the toughest conditions and get you everywhere you want to go worry-free. Silverado's designed to handle the big jobs. It's built for the great outdoors. With over 13,000 pounds of towing capacity and trailering sway control, Silverado can haul the biggest loads on the roughest roads and keep you cool as a Sunday drive. With 8 available cameras and up to 14 different views, it can spot trouble before it gets to you. That's peace of mind. And when you're ready for the backcountry, Chevy Silverado 1500 ZR2 owns the off-road. You name it, we run over it. No wonder it's Motor Trend's 2023 four-wheeler pickup truck of the year. So see your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and check out a Chevy Silverado. It's freedom to explore the great outdoors.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Thanks for being with me this morning. And my guest, Carrie Loft of the Max McGraw Wildlife Foundation. Carrie, is sort of a segue, we were talking about the efforts in New York State, at least by a legislator, to try to end the idea of the state having shooting preserves or having the state raise birds for shooting preserves, and why we think it's important for conservation that this continue. In the Atlantic Flyway, for many, many years, lots and lots and lots of mallard ducks have been released. And it appears, Carrie, that there's some indication that maybe this wasn't such a good idea after all. What do you think's going on?
Well, what the issue is this, Charlie. I mean, mallards have been released for decades, as you said, particularly on the East Coast, to provide opportunities. And people didn't think that they would have an impact on the wild population. An early study in the mid-80s or so, there was found that there was little mixing between wild and unbanded farm mallards, if you will. But there was no DNA testing being done at that time. And now there is. And the initial paper came out about 2 years ago, survey of 1,000 mallards in the Atlantic Flyway. 2% of those mallards were genetically wild. The rest had at least some game farm mallard in it. And, you know, and game farm mallards have different traits than wild ones. In fact, in some people's eyes, the game farm mallard should be a separate species. They look like a wild mallard, but they have shorter, wider bills, shorter wings, longer legs. They don't hold fat the way a wild mallard does, and they can't sustain the long-term flight that a migratory bird does. And this has been a problem because people think that this may be contributing to the demise of the mallard population on the East Coast. And also, it's starting to migrate westward. There's a genetic sampling program going on now called Duck DNA, in which hunters are sending in the tongues of their mallards to see just how much farm genes are getting out there. So it bears watching. But again, I don't have a real answer to this because lots of people rely on released mallards, well, duck trainers for one. Dog trainers. I don't know how you train a duck on wild birds. You buy a pen-raised mallard and you use those to train. So it's going to be interesting to watch this and just see what happens on a governmental and private level as more is learned about how these farm-raised birds are affecting the wild populations.
Well, and there are two kinds of, actually three kinds of releases for mallards. One is the idea that they were doing the Atlantic Flyway for many, many years because they really didn't have very many mallards. The population had collapsed. And so they were releasing tens of thousands of ducklings, of which more survived than they might have thought. And as you said, it wasn't believed that they would interbreed with naturally wild mallards, but they did. Then there's obviously the release of mallards for people who, I'm not going to pass judgment on it, but who tower shoot. And then there's the release of mallards by dog trainers. But I guess what it's doing, Carrie, is for the first time, we're finding out that, you know, maybe the early science was really wrong and that there is a genetic connection between game farm mallards and wild mallards. And that would be tragic.
I don't think there's any doubt that it's affecting it. You know, this ongoing study, Duck DNA, is showing that it's having an impact. The question is, how do we minimize the impact of the duck release? I mean, you know, Charlie, you talked about the tower shoot. You know, and that's an ethical decision. The bigger question is just, should farm-raised mallards be released at all, no matter what way you're releasing them? You know, if they're getting into the wild, how do we prevent them from influencing the survival rate of the wild mallard? You know, that there's even data to suggest that these farm-raised mallards will just drop an egg wherever they are when the mood strikes, and they don't have any kind of instinct to nest in the cover that allows, you know,
And yet, Carrie, they obviously, enough are surviving, and we could go on for hours. For those of you listening, I'm sure a lot of you are saying, well, wait a minute, what about fish? You know, what's happening with all these farm-raised fish that are interbreeding with wild fish, salmon in particular? I mean, it's a whole question, but it comes back to, Carrie, we don't have enough wild populations and enough habitat to sustain the interest of people across North America in hunting and fishing with just wild bird populations or wild fish populations. And the number of hatchery-raised fish is obviously enormous. And it provides the only fishing opportunity an awful lot of people get. So as we learn more about science, I guess, Carrie, we're going to learn more about the impacts. But I can hear the Wild Salmon Center calling me right now and saying, we've told you all these salmon release programs, they're interbreeding with wild salmon and they're ruining the gene stock. But Carrie, before we get off the air, I have something very important to ask you. You have edited a wonderful book, which I always get the title confused, and I'm not going to call it Straight Shooting for Hunters. So you have written an absolutely wonderful book. You want to tell us about it in the minute we have left?
Sure. Two friends of mine, Anthony Matarese Jr., who you've had on the show before, probably the best sporting clay shooter the U.S. has ever produced, and the most in-demand shooting coach in the country, and Will Primos, the famous call make manufacturer media personality, contacted me, and we worked together to create a book called Straight Shooting for Hunters, and it's aimed at people who aren't necessarily interested in becoming competitive target shooters, but want to be a little bit more efficient in the field. You can get it on Amazon, you can get it on other means of ordering. But thank you for your comment, Charlie, because you're exactly the person we thought of when we wrote the book. You like to shoot, but it's not your pastime.
Yeah, teaching me to shoot better. Straight Shooting for Hunters and Not Shooting Straight for Hunters. Straight Shooting for Hunters. You can get it on Amazon. Carrie, thank you. We've run out of time. Happy New Year, everyone. We'll be back next Sunday morning with much more on the great outdoors. And Carrie, we always appreciate your wisdom and your time on the air. Thank you.
Sure.
This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago in America, 720 WGN.